Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp podcast. I am Ted Cluck. They are Ronald J. Martin and Barnabas Piper. And boys, we've got a fun one on tap today. But before we get into all the fun, Pipe, you have to take care of some business, man, because again, it is raining sponsors on this program. So why don't you tell us about a couple of books?
It is raining sponsors. One of them is the same sponsor we had last week, who is Tyndale House Publishers and Nav Press. They're a publishing conglomerate. I think that's the technical term.
Dude,
actually, what that really means is Tyndale bailed Nav Press out when they were really struggling. But that's a little behind the scenes business in the publishing world.
Dude, if we ever become the Happy Rand and Reformed Pubcast, then we'll know that it's time to get out of the business.
This is the point at which I need to sign off, Big T, because that will never.
That can never happen, man.
That can never happen. We are a conglomerate. We don't combine.
That's right.
We don't have to join forces with other people. We are who we are, right?
We buy and sell other podcasts.
Here we stand and we can do no other, to quote the great Martin Luther.
Yeah, and to keep us a little reform, keep us on the reform
tip.
Right.
We will out-reform the reformed guys.
We actually do out-reform the reform guys, because at the end of the day, we're probably more Luther than we are Calvin. We're a little less pretentious. We're a little less, we're a little less kind of stuck up about it, I think.
And we yell at people more, kind of like Luther.
Yes.
Yeah.
We make fun of people like Luther.
Oh, we make fun of people. Absolutely.
Yeah. We smoke cigars like Luther. I do.
So would you say, so then can we just say that Reform Pubbed is a little more Calvin and HR is a little more Luther? I like that.
Dude, I like that from a branding standpoint.
I like what it does to my self-confidence too, Big T.
Mine too, baby. I love what it does to all of our self-confidences.
Totally okay. That's a thing. Yes, I'm okay with that comparison through and through.
Yeah.
The book that I'm supposed to be highlighting right now is called Next Door as It Is in Heaven by Lance Ford and Brad Briscoe. Both of those guys are church planters, missional church planting trainers. They head up the centralized conference and network. And so what the book is helping us bring basically the mission of discipleship, the mission of sharing the gospel, the mission of connecting with people for the gospel into our neighborhoods. The idea being that neighborhoods used to be where people had their closest connections, and that's no longer true. So they give real practical ways to look into hospitality and neighborliness and all of that in the sense of creating a true community. So it's not like church small group community, but rather creating a community in your neighborhood. And so that's Next Door as It Is in Heaven. It's available now. Lance Ford and Brad Briscoe are the authors. Thanks to Tyndale House and Nav Press for sponsoring us with that.
We got a visual on those guys. Are we talking about a hipster situation here?
You know what? These guys are kind of pre-hipster. They're a little bit older than that, but they look like somebody you might actually like to have as your neighbor. So not a hipster.
That's a
huge endorsement, actually.
We call those pripsters. Pre-hipsters are pripsters. Just remember that.
that sounded almost like prepster, which is a little bit like yupster.
It is, but it's not. Hipster. It's right. not. It's a pripster, right?
Okay, we got to get our dollars right. Got it. Okay. Yeah. No, I looked them up so that I would know who we were endorsing, and I looked at these guys, and I was like, if those guys were my next-door neighbors, I think I would enjoy.
Yeah, you could live with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I would enjoy having them as neighbors.
Man, that's good to know.
Can't say that about every author out there, so props to Lance and Brad.
You can't say that about hipster authors ever, right?
Ever.
Hence that comment we got from the angry guy, online about, making fun of hipsters. And we can kind of delve down that path after you're right.
Hipsters are an unreached people group, apparently.
Piper, tell you what, man, finish your endorsement, and then let's talk about that for 1 second before we dive into it. Because I think it needs to be covered. I think it needs to be covered.
So you can suss that out, Big R. Yeah.
This next book is one that's published by Waterbrook Multnomah. That's your guys' publisher for your most recent book, correct?
Indeed it is.
So the fine people at Waterbrook are supporting us with a different book. It's not Bridezilla of Christ, your excellent work. It is a book with a really fantastic title by Mark Batterson. It's called In a Pit with a Lion on a Snowy Day.
Wait a minute, I've heard of that thing. Did that come out like a long time ago, right?
It's that they are re-releasing and revising it. So this is a new edition of a book that's been out for a while. But so here's the thing about this book. That title is from a story in, I think, 2 Samuel, which when I was a kid, it's literally a one-sentence Bible story where it's talking about the great men of David and this one guy whose name I can't pronounce because it's an Old Testament name. It's something like Benaiah. It says he chased a lion.
Which there's 16 kids in our church named that, by the way.
Oh, that's perfect. You're clearly a Reformed church. Probably absolutely. A bunch of homeschoolers. Benaiah chased a lion down into a pit. Then, despite the snow and slippery ground, he caught the lion and killed it. That's the whole story.
Yeah.
Which I always loved. I always loved that as a kid. That's not the whole book. That's the Bible story. But the book is about basically the concept that at the end of your life, you will regret the things that you did not pursue, the dreams, the goals, the things that God has called you to that you did not pursue. So what are you not doing to step out in courage, for example, killing lions in the snow? So Batterson is the author. He's written a whole bunch of books. Circle Maker was probably his most famous one, and all the spinoff products. He's the pastor of National Community Church in Washington, D.C., which is right near Capitol Hill. They also run this really cool little coffee house near Capitol Hill and near the train station there. So if you're ever there, it's called Ebenezer's Coffee House. So if you're ever looking for a nice Americano while touring around the mall in D.C., go check out Ebenezer's. But that's the book, In a Pit with a Lion on a Snowy Day. It releases the day after this podcast releases, the new edition does. So go ahead and order it, and it will be in your mailbox shortly. So thanks to Waterbrook Multnomah for sponsoring us with that one.
Nice. I like that.
Nicely done. Beautifully done. And Big R, I feel like you've got something on your mind vis-a-vis hipsters, man.
No, man. I just thought – no. I kind of didn't until one of you guys just said something about Pripsters. Yeah, yeah.
That was you who said that about Pripsters.
When I said that thing about Pripsters, it reminded me of what I wanted to say that I wasn't remembering what I wanted to say about, which was what – I think it was you, Pipe. What was that – what was a little bit of that back and forth action you got with somebody who was saying we were being, you know, we weren't being very missional and very Christ-like to hipsters?
So last week, during a text exchange between the three of us, we started batting around the core values of hipsterdom. And Ted was inspired and wrote it up into a very entertaining blog post that went up at the Blazing Center. And so I shared this on Twitter, pushed it out there, just like, hey, read this post. And a gentleman, we'll call him a gentleman, responded and said, and basically said, how can we ever reach this people group for Christ if all we do is mock them? And I didn't quite know how to respond to that. And
so, you don't even know how to talk about it right now. I don't even know what to say.
Here's the thing. He's probably right. But it's really obnoxious.
Well, no, my response to him was, I said, don't worry. They don't know we're mocking them because no hipster knows they're a hipster.
Yeah, that's true, man.
And
he
came back at me and chastised me for my flippant attitude about their souls. And
dude, about the serious discussion that he was trying to have on Twitter. Yeah, come on, Pipe.
I know.
Remember where you are. You're on Twitter.
Nothing corrects a soul faster than a Twitter correction. Nothing makes me repent faster than somebody calling me a dummy on Twitter.
You better believe it.
He missed the point because one of the ways that you reach the hipster and possibly pripster community is you speak with a lot of irony. I mean that is the lingo of the hipster, and
that's right.
You know, a hipster should be able to read something funny about themselves and sarcastic about themselves and understand that at the very least they have to laugh at it, because part of being a hipster is understanding that type of irony that goes along
or
with
at
it.
Least so, here's the thing: if you make fun of hipsters the way that blog post did, they will read it and laugh at all of their friends who are just like that.
Absolutely,
and completely miss all of it about themselves.
So let me just say that we are being as missional as humanly possible to hipsters, because we are using their language to try to reach them with the message of Christ.
That's right.
Baby, that's so sound.
Earnestness and directness just won't play.
I'm typing out the proposal right now for the book on that we're going to write.
Well, and Big R, you have a unique voice in this space, as it were, because you are not only a man of the cloth, a man of the vintage distressed cloth. You're our resident hipster on the program as well.
You know, and I gotta say, Big T, it was a little hats. It was a little disturbing when you many military hats. It was a little disconcerting when I read your description of me on the front of
okay,
front
baby, talk
the article.
About that.
Aging hipster.
I meant aging in the reverse because of the tea that you're drinking. I meant to say reverse aging.
I think you meant to say it. You failed to say it, and now you got a wounded hipster comrade on the other end of the phone
wounded
right now.
Wounded warrior, man. Hey, listen. You know what? Let the healing begin.
So you would be like a formerly aging current hipster.
Well, I mean, current hipster. How serious are you guys about Youthberry? I think that's what the question is. If you guys are serious about Youthberry, there's nothing aging about me. I'm pre-aging. I'm praging right now. Like I'm going to turn into a pripster before you know it.
You're going to be a pre-hipster.
That's what I mean, because I'm de-aging. I'm gauging right now. I'm drinking.
You're in a word combining just role today.
I'm a pastor. It's all about alliteration. You know that pipe.
Dude, you're engaging the culture, man. That's what you do. Well, boys, we've got a lot to cover today on the program, as always. And Big R, I'm glad you brought that to our attention. That conversation needed to happen, man. Truly.
Yeah, well, I need to heal. I need to heal.
Dude, you need to heal. We need to walk through this with you, man. And part of how we're going to do that is we're going to talk about some other fun things, and we're going to get your mind off of that hurt, okay? And
that's good counseling, man. I feel like I'm speaking to David Powelson right now. I mean, this is really reaching into my collective soul right now.
Lean into that with me, Ronnie.
David Powelson loves sarcasm and irony as a therapy tactic. So we're right on track. Yeah.
Well, CCEF, yeah. I mean, there it is. Yep.
That's right. Well, boys, we've got, as I said, several things to talk about, one of which is this issue, Pipe, and you brought this up, of plagiarism. And we've seen it kind of play out at a high level with Drisky and some book publishing stuff. But the kind of the context that you brought it up in was in the context of just bloggers and like people ripping off like whole chunks, whole paragraphs, whole even bios or sections of bios from blog posts. And I mean, plagiarism is one of those topics that, I mean, it's sort of like, yeah, you say, well, that, yeah, it sucks. I'm against that, you know, and what more can you say about it? But there's actually, I think, some interesting stuff to be said. Certainly, I see it in the classroom as a professor. So I'll let you guys riff, and then I'll say a little bit about what I see at the college level.
Yeah, so the context this came up in was that a friend of mine who is she's a blogger, has a good following, very loyal readership. She wrote an article, I think it went up, I want to say Christianity Today recently, their website, about plagiarism. And she relayed a story of somebody who took almost an entire chunk of her sort of about page on her blog and used it as theirs. So it's almost like saying, well, I don't really have an identity, so I'm just going to take yours. And but then what made it crazy was that this person denied it, even though you can do sort of a search and compare and you go, that's the exact same verbiage. And then it happened to her again not too long ago. I ran into a situation where I wrote a blog post and somebody else – they didn't technically plagiarize in terms of wording, but they followed my exact outline and wrote the exact same post, never linking back to mine. And I think that's part of it is where are you giving credit for where you're getting this stuff versus – where are you claiming it as your own? Because it's fine to reshare other people's stuff. That's not plagiarism, as long as you're saying, hey, this is somebody else's stuff.
Mm. Big R, what's your experience with plagiarism?
You know, man, it's weird because, you know, obviously, you know, I agree with all of that, you know, and I think that it's like – it's kind of a fine line, isn't it? I mean, so it's like everybody's stealing everything all the time. We just have to sort of – we have to say that, like, hey, I heard something someone said and it turned into something. And so, yeah, that's not a word for word thing that I'm quoting, but I kind of got my idea from the germ of an idea from somebody else. So in a sense, what is that, plagiarism? And then if you come from the, if you come from the music end of things, like I did all those years, I mean, there's a lot of this where there's, you know, every time I play three chords and sing a melody, it's going to mimic something and it might be influenced by something. And so even you're seeing a lot of that pop up now where like artists are like suing other artists for like stealing a melody, but it's like, oh my gosh, man. I mean, it's like there's only so many melodies, there's only so many ways of phrasing these things. And you know, I don't know how far you go with it unless it's a direct quote like Pipe just laid out. But is this just another way that we're becoming like super sensitive and we think we can gain a larger platform by saying somebody with a bigger platform is taking from us?
Oh man, go ahead, Pipe.
The thing that it on the extreme ends, it's very obvious when somebody's doing this. You know, if they claim word – if they take word-for-word sections of somebody else – so this wouldn't apply to music because, you know, chord progressions and whatever else are probably a little bit – I don't know. They're probably a little bit harder to pin down. But, like, if you take an entire paragraph from somebody else's work, and you drop it into yours, and it's just seamlessly in there as if it, and so you are presenting it as your own. That's theft. I mean, you're stealing somebody else's idea, and it's a really easy thing not to do.
Right.
Because you can take that exact same paragraph and just say, you know, as Ronnie Martin said in, or, you know, drop a little footnote in there and actually drop in the source or whatever. Like, that's so easy to do, and it, and you, you're giving credit to the source material. Where it's fuzzy is when you get into that intellectual property idea. So I ran into this instance with another friend recently where he wrote a short book on some leadership stuff, and another guy came to him and said, hey, you use my material in there. But what's fuzzy is that the other guy didn't originate the material either. They're all sort of drawing from this. They're drawing from a small pool of content. And so people are going to arrive at the same conclusions. If they're influenced by the same people, they're going to use the same phrasing.
Yeah. That's my point.
And
right?
If you go listen to Reform pastors who are influenced by John Piper and Tim Keller, they're going to sound like they're plagiarizing each other.
They all sound the same. Yeah,
because,
absolutely.
Right. But is that plagiarism, or is that sort of a family of influence?
That's a family of influence. But I think don't you think it crosses over, though? Because, I mean, it's weird, because if we start using all the same phrases that turn into the same sentences that lead into paragraphs that sound moderately the same. I know that's not taking an exact quote, but in a sense, we're all borrowing all the time, right, to sort of assemble our own thoughts.
Well, yeah, I mean, every idea has its DNA from other ideas. You know, you hear something and it forms into something else. And I think, so if you're a creator, so you're composing music, you're writing something, the goal is to create something that is as true to your voice as it can be.
Right.
Now, if your voice is strikingly similar to somebody else's, that's tough. Or if you're somebody who learned how to write by imitating, which a lot of people do, and that's not a bad thing necessarily, you still run into it, but it's still really easy not to plagiarize. It's incredibly easy not to plagiarize. To plagiarize either takes extreme ignorance or extreme I don't give a crap about this. Like there's those are the only two options as far as
I can tell. Let me ask though, and T, maybe you can deal with this, man. Do you think, you know, but look, when you take a quote from somebody, you got to quote them, right? Sometimes you'll take a thought from somebody and you'll flesh it out in your own way. There's nothing to quote there. You've just kind of taken like literally a germ of what someone says, and it causes you to flesh out something larger from that point. And maybe you should give whatever, you know, Tim Keller credit for like originating the thought or whatever. But what I want to know is like, what is the mind? And this goes back to what Pipe originally said. What is the mindset of somebody that just like apes something, like just takes it and like puts it down and doesn't give credit for it? Like, what's the mindset? Do they think they're getting away with something? You know what I'm saying?
I mean, in the context where I see it, I mean, obviously I see it in the classroom, and I teach at a Christian college, a great Christian college. We get great students, but every semester, I mean, there's always one or two, you know, and I think it comes down to a lot of times for the college student, it's a matter of, you know, I'm rushed, I'm in a hurry, I put this off, I'm going to try to like slap a bunch of things that I've cut and pasted together and pawn it off as my own. And truly, like, you don't have to be in the education business very long to be able to spot that. And I implore my kids on day one, like, I will know. Like, I just will know, not because I'm the smartest guy in the world, but because it's so easy to spot it. And so I think, you know, laziness is one aspect of that, Big R. But the other one is, you know, I think there's so many people trying to use blogs to leverage themselves into a book deal or into some deal writing magazine articles. And people want that fame and they want the dream so bad that they're willing to, you know, see something that they like and slap it on there and hope that nobody catches it. And it's sad. I mean, I think you're dealing with seared consciences all across the board. And I think from a Christian standpoint, that's the part of it that's most distressing to me, is just the idea that, you know, we've become so hardened, you know, for one reason or another, that we can just do this. But in the classroom, it's actually been a great, an amazing context for talking about the gospel. So inevitably this happens. The students come to class and I sit them down and I say, look, you know, there are two papers that I feel really, really strongly were plagiarized. And I say to them, if you come to me like a man and you admit it, you confess to it, you repent, I say that that sin will be removed as far as the East is from the West in terms of our relationship. So I will be cool to you in the classroom. I'll continue to trust you with things. You know, yeah. You will have to deal with the consequence. You know, you'll get a zero on the paper. And that's a model of how sin works in real life, right? If I sin against someone, even if they forgive me and we restore the relationship, oftentimes
there's still
a consequence. So I think the classroom is a great way to like.
Well, here's teach okay. That so I think we're getting dangerously close to being Reformed Pubcast right now because this is getting real. It's getting real Presbyterian and real serious right now. Okay, boys, let's just check ourselves for 1 minute. Let's pause. Let's step back. Let's breathe, Big T, because everything you said was spot on. It was a great sermon. Do you think that a lot of this comes from younger people that think they're quoting things that they don't think other people have heard of because they think they're the most well-read people in the world, you know?
I see, in the classroom, like, I don't know, we'll have a movie review assignment and somebody will copy and paste like a review from Roger Ebert, you know? And it's like, this ran in the Chicago Sun-Times. This does not sound like college sophomore level writing, you know? I get ridiculous stuff like that. And I think for a writer and Pipe and Big R, you guys are both writers. You'll relate to this. Like our style is so, your style is what you hang your hat on. And, you know, I have a really kind of sensitive ear for style anyway. And I get to know all my students and probably all the bloggers that you read, you kind of get to know their voice. Yeah, their voice. And if something deviates from that, like it's jarring and you notice.
And I think you said something earlier, Ted, that in this world of platform and using blogs, I think that's a lot to do with it, because if you are writing, if you see yourself as a writer, you are trying to voice an idea or a story as well as you can in your voice, then plagiarism is anathema because it's not you.
This is your thing.
Yeah. Whereas if you are trying to use words to reach another end, you know, I just need to get my paper turned in, and so I'm sort of taking the lazy route, or I'm just trying to get eyeballs on my site by starting the best mommy blog or whatever, that all of a sudden everything is a means to an end, and you don't – the sanctity of content does not matter in that context.
Right, you've lost your integrity. You've lost your integrity as an artist.
Well, you're not an artist. You're a platform builder. You're a click getter, not an artist. And I don't mean that in some sanctimonious way. I'm just talking because you can put together a site like that that is perfectly legitimate. But I think when you get into that site or into that mindset, it is where other people's content. It's easy to cross that boundary at that point because all you're trying to do is figure out what can I do to get the most eyeballs on the site and to present it the best way instead of saying, what am I creating to share from me?
Yeah, for sure. Well, boys, speaking of things that have been created and shared, we are in a time right now with the Olympics and in kind of summer blockbuster movie season where you're seeing a lot of think pieces and a lot of responses to things from a Christian standpoint, wherein let's say somebody goes to see the Bourne movie, which I went and saw, unremarkable. A bunch of people got killed. You know, Jason Bourne had like four lines of dialogue and then the movie was over, but I digress.
Boy, did he look old.
Yeah. Boy, did he look old. Exactly. And until he took his shirt off, I think his Youthberry T. Vanna T. is working like from the neck down.
That's right.
He's not drinking. Maybe you've seen this.
Well, he's not drinking Youthberry. I talked to Matt Damon a couple days ago and I said, Matt, I go, are you like, I know you go to T-Von. I see you there almost weekly in Ashland. And I said, do you, you know, when you order tea, you're clearly not ordering Youthberry, dude.
He needs some Youthberry eye cream.
He just said, I never even heard of Youthberry. So I actually introduced Matt Damon to Youthberry tea after, because obviously he listened to the podcast. He wanted to know more about it.
So we're going to get, so basically what we're going to get is a sequel to Rounders in like a year.
Absolutely.
That would be great.
Absolutely. You know, he's just not drinking the right stuff. Yeah.
I shared Youthberry tea with Tommy Lee Jones, who, if you saw the Bourne movie, looked like he was about 150 years old in it.
Oh, you did? Good.
To be fair, he's looked like that for like 25 years.
He has, but I saw him recently, you guys. He looks like Justin Bieber. I mean, he looks like a kid.
So, Justin Bieber is Tommy Lee Jones.
They're one in the same. You know, they're one in the same. So anyway, the point being, you know, we go to see these pictures. We watch these soft focus, inspirational Olympic stories that undoubtedly run with sports that we don't care about. And so you see these pieces popping up where people are trying to sort of suss out Christian themes or teaching or whatever based on these largely secular pieces of media or sports or whatever. And my sense is that this is annoying, although I always kind of feel like a jerk when I say that. So what's your take on that, boys?
Not that that's ever stopped us.
Not that that's ever really stopped me. Sadly, no, it hasn't. But what do you guys think of this phenomenon, man? And I have to come clean here. Like, I've done it a couple times where, you know, I you know what? I did it when I saw The Great Gatsby. So I see Gatsby. You have all these, like, Ecclesiastes-esque thoughts, and I ended up doing a piece for GECO about it.
Well, there's such a difference. I mean, there's a difference between The Great Gatsby and Jason Bourne.
Dude, that's right.
Because The Great Gatsby was a literary work of art designed to draw out those themes. Like, that was
the point. That's right.
And Jason Bourne is not a literary anything. It's a mindless movie of watching Matt Damon beat people up, which has an entertainment merit all its own.
It does work on that level. Yeah, absolutely.
I thoroughly enjoyed that aspect of it. What I didn't enjoy was the blog piece or pieces I saw afterwards that are like Jason Bourne and a Christ figure in the gospel. Ugh. It's like, why are you ruining a perfectly fun, dumb movie?
Dude, right. At no point while watching Bourne did I think any kind of spiritual thought. None. Like, no.
And it was literally just watching some.
It is okay, right? But it was watching a guy beat up other guys for 2 hours.
Big T's like, I was completely secularized during that hour and a half.
Literally,
the Holy Spirit removed himself from my heart. There was not one thought.
Dude, no, I'm not saying that. But I didn't have any intellectual, like, oh, thinky. You know, I didn't have any of those, like, impulses during the movie.
When I watched Jason Bourne, I become an Arminian for an hour and 30 minutes.
I really do. Man.
I don't think I could have come up. I mean, I'm sure I could have satirically come up with, but I don't think I could have come up with a genuine piece that I felt good about writing tying Jason Bourne or most summer block, like Tarzan would be another one. Like, I thought the Tarzan movie was another great, fun, dumb movie.
Right.
And trying to tie that to some sort of gospel reality. And I feel like if you do that, you're actually ruining people's ability to enjoy entertainment because you have theologized the crap out of something that is atheological and just something that is fun. And fun is okay. Like, fun is okay all by itself.
Well, dude, this is the problem. This gets back to, like, the, you know, the pushback that we got from, you know, hipsters as a people group or whatever. And it's just like, you know, clearly the point of this was just to have a little fun, man. I mean, it's like not even 500 words of haha. So, you know, take it or leave it. And, you know, it's not meant to be this deep theological treatise on how we reach hipsters, you know?
In fact, there was not even a hint of that in there.
Not even a hint, not even a whiff, right?
I think people do the same thing with, I mean, so we got the Olympics going on right now. There is no greater, like, feeding trough for terrible Christian think pieces than the Olympics.
That's true, man.
I mean, it's everything from, here are 15 Christian athletes you should root for. Like, well, none of them are going to win gold medals, so why do I want to root for them? And and all the way to, like, all the things we can learn about glory and pursuit of glory and single-mindedness and all this stuff. And, like, the fact that I can rattle these things off tells you just how much it is, because I haven't read any of these pieces. I've only seen the blog titles.
We grew up with this kind of language, man.
This is not new.
Every four years,
that's
you
true.
Get this.
I could actually write the piece for next, what would that be, the 2020 Olympics. I could go ahead and write the blogs now.
Dude, you could write a Mad Lib format of the piece and just drop in different names and different events, and you've got the piece.
I don't really care much about the Olympics. It's, you know, I enjoy watching. The things that stand out to me about it are how intense the competitors are, how joyful the families are, and the way they celebrate when they win. Because that's not something you see in most professional sports, and it is refreshing. But like, it ruins the enjoyment of what could be a very entertaining and sometimes spectacular event to theologize it. And it's constant. And this is coming from somebody who wrote something like, I don't know, 200 articles about sports from a Christian perspective for World magazines. And sometimes I felt dirty doing it, because I'm like, I think I just Jesus juked people for 500 words.
Yeah, right, man.
I think I just ruined the Super Bowl, you know?
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
It's the worst.
Yeah. Big R, what are your thoughts on this, baby? A, have you seen the Bourne movie? B, have you watched any minutes of the Olympics?
I've seen every Bourne movie, but the fake one that came out before this new one, I've not seen
The Jeremy Renner spinoff.
Dude, now see, yeah. I liked that one.
Actually. I thought it was pretty fun too.
I wasn't trying to make commentary. I was just being funny on that.
Yeah, that was the only one that deviated from the kind of formula of all the other ones. I enjoyed it for that reason. But anyway, big R.
Yeah, but I so I haven't seen them. I saw the original ones, which I liked. Yeah. No big deal. And I have not seen one. I take that back. I saw some row your boating yesterday on the screen at a hipster cafe I was at waiting for an appointment. But
cafe had rowing on.
Yeah, it had like a big screen.
That's the anti-hipster sport. That's like the ultimate yuppie sport.
The ultimate yuppie, my dad owned six companies kind of sport.
It was like women solo rowing. It was like bafflingly. It was so boring. But I just think – so this is the thing, right? This is where I come from. I think there's a lot of fear and guilt when Christians watch anything – within the entertainment realm. And for some, and we've come from that era where it's like it's mindless entertainment. Anything that's mindless, we got to redeem.
Yeah, like don't have a TV, that whole thing.
Well, and look, I don't think everybody necessarily is coming from it from an extreme bent. So, you got people that want to redeem the time and they want to watch something. They want to draw something from it that can be instructive and it can be edifying. And I think that's fine. I mean, that's fine. I think there's times that we do that even unwittingly, and then there's times where we just watch things and we're like, that was a great performance. And I think it's enough for it to be a great performance. We know that the great performance was only he was only able to do that because of God's hand on his life to give him the kind of skills necessary to create that kind of performance. Like we would agree with that and we get that. But I don't know that it has to be sort of, as you would say, Big T, sussed out to the degree that I think the world expects that from us and maybe starts rolling our eyes because they think that we're just sort of a one word on this whole thing. You know what I mean? I think we need to be careful of it from that standpoint. Like we should be able to sit down with our neighbors who does not know Christ, watch the Olympics and go, dude, what'd you think of Phelps? Like that was over the top, past the pretzels and then move on from that,
As opposed to playing like it's like the 6 degrees of separation from Kevin Bacon game. Except it's like 6 degrees of separation from Jesus Christ. And so you have to start with Michael Phelps and like, what's the fewest number of steps you can get to Jesus from? Like Michael Phelps to what brings you to Christ? And that's like the Christian way of quote unquote enjoying sports, which takes all the enjoyment right out of sports or movies.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think we're sensitive to that, right? We grew up in sort of a culture where it was – everybody trying to draw that from entertainment as a way to redeem entertainment. And for some of us who are not, for some of us of which entertainment hasn't become a big problem or a big idol for us, we can just take it for what it is. And if the opportunity arises in that to say, man, when I look at Phelps, man, I see a dude that has just like surpassed other athletes in his skill and his dedication, his devotion. And, maybe if there's some things to draw from that, we can do it in a way that doesn't sound like agonizing. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Now, boys, speaking of entertainment, last topic, we are in the entertainment business. We are entertainment professionals.
Moguls,
if you will.
I like
mogul. We've been approached by someone who's close to this program. Someone who was involved in the history of the program. And he is asked to be involved again in a limited way. As we near our 100th ep, I think – what number is this, guys, that we're recording right now?
This will be 99, so we're very near to our 100th ep.
This is 99. So the 100th ep, we are in negotiations with the camp of Trogues, Stephen Al Trogi, to see if we can bring him back onto the program for one episode.
It's a somewhat cantankerous camp, I must say.
It's what it always was, Pipe. I saw you guys
– It's true.
I saw your dialogues yesterday, and I thought this is Trogues. This is who he is. This is the old Trogues.
I mean, maybe that's a good sign. Maybe it means he's back to his old self.
Maybe he will come onto the program with a renewed sense of vigor.
I mean, do they let him have like like podcasting time along with like conjugal visits? I mean, does that is he allowed to do that?
No, he has got a little arts and crafts.
He has to pick one, which is why this is such a big deal, because he chose this.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Like, I was just wondering. I didn't. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't think they'd let him. Yeah. So, Lord willing, we will get Trogs back on the program.
This is Trogs' one phone call.
It's Trogs' one phone call he gets from parts unknown. So boys, what's the over under on number of days that will go by after Trogs is on the program before he asks to come back full time onto the program?
Well, I haven't given the okay for Trogs to come back on yet. So this is another conversation.
Big R, listen, man, he's going to get a taste of this fame and the kind of decadence that we're accustomed to in this space, and he's going to want back.
Man. Big T, I don't know if it's healthy for Trogs to come back on even for one app. I'm just
I don't know that it
you.
Is. I think you know? we're
it's
playing
like an
with
alcoholic
fire
in a liquor store.
That's
it
what I'm
really
saying.
Is.
What I mean, what
it
are we
really
doing,
is.
Right? That's like a hipster at a log company. I mean, I don't know that's a healthy direction. For
that's
Trogs,
like a hipster
take so.
Tivana. Guys,
I mean,
what are
right?
We doing here?
Do we love? Do you we know? Love Trogs, or do we just? Are we inviting him into to the hell that is the Happy Rant? I
are
mean,
we I, trying to use Trogs?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
It's his hell, not ours, to be clear.
I know, but I just don't feel like we're. I don't feel. You know, going back to what we said a minute ago, are we loving him well? Are we loving Trogs well by allowing him into something that's going to be so damaging to him?
Boy,
that literally sent him into rehab and eventually jail. I mean,
in an event to get himself back into our good graces, Trogs, he actually suggested the last topic for today, man.
And he did
get into this.
He did it completely unironically, too. I mean, that's the amazing bit. It wasn't like there was no like subtle jab at us.
Yeah, there was no subtle jab. It didn't come wrapped in the usual Trogsian insult that usually accompanies, you know, each bit of correspondence. But you know what? Can I digress for a second? Speaking of crappy movies, Zach Bartles and I have this thing where when we get together, we watch it just a turd of a movie and just make fun of it. But to make it a perfect movie for this context, like it has to be fun enough to watch that while we're making fun of it, we still enjoy it. And
so what's like the perfect movie?
Dude, all right,
for such a thing?
So like the king of that genre was Point Break, right? Remember the old Point Break, Keanu Reeves, Swayze, just junk, man. It's just a garbage movie, right? But it's fun to watch. And so we watched Point Break, and it occurred to us that every bit of male dialogue in Point Break starts with the two men screaming insults at each other, and then they bring it down a level to like making some sort of like snide sexual insult to one another, and then only after those two things have happened can real normal like dialogue take place. And That was the framework for every male conversation in Point Break, and I think it's similar with Trogs, man. Like the piece of dialogue just always comes wrapped in that little insult. But Trogs threw this at us, and I want you guys to consider this thoughtfully. Don't speak too rapidly on this. But the question is, if you were to host a reality program, that is, if you had a chance to look at the whole smorgasbord of reality TV out there and host one of the shows, what show would you host? Pipe, I'm going to throw this to you first.
Man.
Wait, are we answering for ourselves or am I picking for you guys?
Oh, you're answering for yourself. All and right. Then maybe if we want to do the other way, we can do that too.
Okay. Let's see. Reality TV. I think I need something where I could freely insult people.
Yeah.
I mean, the classic would be like the Simon Cowell role in what is he at? America's Got Talent originally.
Yeah.
Idol. I mean, I don't know enough about music to be an accurate judge, but I'm not sure he knows anything about music either. I think he's just a successful producer by accident.
And he had the white like tight t-shirts.
Yeah, that's so you.
He just has that really snide look on his face the whole time, so that the singers are always just wondering, does he hate me?
Right.
I mean, that could be a good fit, although I think it may play to the worst aspects of my personality.
That wouldn't be good for your character.
No. I think I could do a good job at it. I'm really
good.
Yeah,
it's like Trogs coming on the rant, right? It's not going to play to his character.
Yeah, I don't know that I have the personality for it, but the Anthony Bourdain, basically, I get to travel anywhere, do crazy stuff, and eat whatever
I want.
Dude,
I love that show.
Like,
man.
I think that's
love
a better
that
fit
show.
For you, Ted.
Yeah, I could do that. I could totally see doing that, man. Lots of interviewing,
I would love
lots of
to
eating.
Try it. Yeah, yeah, I mean, you basically get to go to exotic places, learn about cultures, sort of learn about cultures, and try the best they have to offer to eat. That sounds amazing.
Dude, it does. It sounds
I think it's
so
a way
amazing.
Better fit for you, and I would actually watch that show, though.
Dude, we should all three host that show together. We should turn this into that show. Big R, what about you, baby? What are you feeling?
Dude, you know what, man? You know which one I would like to do, man? I don't know if you guys remember this reality show. It's from a few years ago, but it was this weirdo show called, like, I think it was called like Frontier House.
What?
And it was literally like three families that went out into the plains of like Montana and lived like little house on the prairie from like the 1800s. And they all had to live in this one room like house with no running water.
The show ended when they all froze to death in
February.
Dude,
absolutely. And it shows them like in the winter literally freezing to death.
Dude, like, now this sounds amazing. What network carried this? Like, I don't know.
It lasted.
Might have been the History Channel or something. I remember seeing promos for it.
It went like two or three seasons, and I had friends. Me and my friends used to like talk about it and just like talk about the different aspects of it. And you had to like wear like old like frontier clothing and you had
overalls
your one
and like boots,
dude. Yeah, and you had to like plant like a garden. You had to have like a cow to get your milk. Like you had to live like that. And I just thought, yeah, all right, I'll give that a shot.
Like, wait, so dude, do you want to host the show or do you want to like go live in Montana in a dirt house?
I mean, I would rather have like the super nice trailer like where you can't see on the side of it and host it while they're absolutely. Well, they're starving to death.
Like, you're in the trailer getting like massages and
staring out your window,
and
sipping coffee and going, man,
right, like,
that
kind, like kind of watching
close.
It, like being in the mix of it would be great without having to suffer like the frozen tundra aspect of it. Like,
no,
during
I totally
the,
agree.
Yeah, so I don't know. I thought that one would be interesting. You know, I don't know, man. It's hard to say. I vision like big. I visualize either you or Pipe. Like, you know what I'd like to see you guys do? Like, be the guy on America's Funniest Home Videos. You know, that's kind of reality a little bit. But just being there and just knowing, hey.
We can't fill the Bob Saget shoes.
Dude, I just feel like that's the easiest gig in the world, though.
I envision, like, gross, like, teenagers from like, sad small towns, like, drinking Mountain Dew and eating, like, chips while they watch that show.
But dude, it's
it
just
makes
like
me feel sad.
But the host of it, you can tell. It's like, dude, this is a good gig. I get paid
I'm
a
here,
lot of money, and I feel
money.
Like I'm dying.
Yep.
I'm dying inside. My career is over.
Like, right.
Dude,
and I love that part of it.
Tom Bergeron hosted that and then went from there. He may still host it. I don't know. And then went from that to hosting Dancing with the Stars, and that was an upgrade. Like, that's how low that show is.
Dude, that show is the lowest, man. That's
I
the
love
lowest.
It. It's almost
you know
like
what's funny, though?
You know what?
It feels like Christian television.
It does.
America's Funniest Home Videos feels like Christian
Dude,
television.
What's funny about that show, man? So we lived in France for a while a couple years ago, and we're hanging out with French friends watching TV. And I flip on the TV. And I'm expecting, like, I don't know, everything to be like the Bicycle Thief in France. Like, everything's really already on TV over there, except that it's not. And they have their own version of America's Funniest Home Video where, like, everybody's getting nutshotted and, like, you know, falling off a bike. And it's the same stuff, man. And
it's like no
I was both like – no, it's
– Lots of broken baguettes and things like that.
Dude, yeah, broken baguettes, et cetera. But yeah, it kind of made me sad that their reality TV was as lowbrow as ours. And in fact, they had a reality figure skating show. Like, so instead of Dancing with the Stars, it was like figure skating with the stars. And, you know, the guy gets out there on the pair of skates and he stumbles around for a while. And then a few episodes in, he's doing like, you know, pirouettes and whatnot.
Some triple guys, or something.
Yeah.
Guys,
yeah.
I want to, if you'll allow me, man, I would like to share something with you that could be a really interesting topic for the next rant. Maybe not 100, but 101. Okay.
Okay.
I, in the 80s, was on a Christian game show program.
Oh, no.
For
like
a month.
As a competitor?
As a competitor.
For a month? And,
Judas, for a month.
What was the name of this show?
It was for a month because I actually won the whole thing. That's why. That's why I kept coming back. It was called The One Way Game.
Okay.
It was on the Trinity Broadcasting Network, so it was obviously super corrupt. But
in the H did you get that gig?
Guys, that'll be a great topic for another time.
Oh, we're not going into it now.
I know.
That
I just
a
want
teaser.
That's a teaser. I just wanted to throw that in there because it reminded me of this was pre-reality show. This is when we had these things called game shows.
Game shows.
If you guys remember that. Oh, absolutely.
Game shows were the money.
So this was kind of like I'll explain it down the road.
Yeah, man, I can't wait. That's one that we won't want to miss.
You guys didn't know I was a game show star, did you?
Oh, there are one-way game clips on
there
YouTube.
There are. Indeed, there are. I knew, Piper, your silence was that you were clicking away. You were Googling your life away on that one.
Well, yeah, we don't use Wikipedia for much, but when Ronnie says he was on a game show, we need video proof.
That's right.
Yeah, those extensive files of Christian game shows from the 80s.
It's huge. There's the big vintage market for that, big team.
Very hipster.
The host has Donald Trump's hair.
He does. He does. He does. I can tell you some stories about him.
Oh, boy. Backstage, that guy was crazy.
Oh. I mean, it was just the decadence. BT.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was another era.
You know what other kinds of show would be really fun to host?
What's that?
Is all the white trash game shows. So like the All American Pickers and the ones where they go around and like they basically dumpster dive, and then there's the one, what is it, the Storage Wars?
Yeah.
And just like the trashiest bunch of people involved in those, but they're reality TV stars in their own right. I feel like that would be tons of fun to host, just from like a sitting back and being like, "What is going on here?"
You wouldn't have any pressure. You know what I mean?
Oh no,
you
like,
know that
you just team your up audience and be like, is very oh, here's crazy Steve who's just gonna buy this entire dumpster's worth of stuff for $7,000 in money that he stole from his grandma,
and then he's gonna buy a bomb and blow it up on the air. You know, just
I mean, dude, obviously I would have loved to have hosted that crazy like pastor's reality show from last year. Remember?
Yeah. What? Dude, I don't even know.
Yeah, it was like
it was like Real Housewives, but it was a pastor's
show. Man. It was health and wealth dudes from like LA that were like super rich, and they wanted to show like, no, these guys are just like us, and watch the ways that they struggle and how hard it is to be a pastor
all these,
of like
shellac dudes that have had like facelifts. Yeah, like
exactly. Yeah. They all have like 15,000 plus person mega churches, and you know,
I love it, man. Yeah, what a train wreck. Yeah, that is insane.
It was a train wreck for sure.
Boys, I'll leave you with this and then I gotta get going, but I would host a show called The Great British Bake Off. Have you seen this, Big R?
No.
Oh dude, it's so good. You and Dublin would love this thing, man. So it's a British show. They get all these people, all these like amateur bakers from across Great Britain, and they start with a bunch of them. So they start with like, I don't know, 25 people. And they're in this huge room in which there are like ovens for all of them to use and like kitchen equipment. And they get an assignment. So the assignment could be like, bake some eclairs. Thank you, Double K. Double K.
Oh, let's say hi to Double K for us. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks for coming in.
Well, we got a special guest on the program, guys. It's Double K, Kristen Cluck.
Exactly. So you'll have some old guy who's like, you know, 85, and he's been doing this his whole life on an amateur basis. And they had some like teenage girl who really loved to bake. And so people get whittled out. You have to eliminate a few people on every app. And then it culminates in a championship kind of scenario.
What network hosts that?
Baby, I don't even know, but it was on Netflix. And here's the thing I loved about it, man. Compared to American food shows, it was so like collegial and fun. And there wasn't that sense of like, competitive, I hate you, I'm gonna rip your eyes out, like that kind of vibe. It was just like everybody.
Or like
really
if
chill.
I, or if like I lose, my entire life is
dude. If I lose,
over.
My life is over. You know, in the American cooking shows, they're forever doing the whole Olympic thing where they're like, well, you know, Bev is baking for her son, you know, Ryan, who's got no arms and no legs, you know, and it's like Judas. They load it up with so much pressure that you really are crushed when the person loses, But yeah, this show is real. It's real chill, man.
Well, if it's on Netflix, I'm going to check it, man. That sounds
fascinating. Yeah, Great British Bake Off. That's right. The show for me.
British television never fails to entertain me.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh yeah, they do a nice job.
I don't know what it is, but yeah, it's just like the understatedness of it. American contestant on game shows and reality TV always make me want to smack them.
Yeah.
And, so I'm down with the Brits, and I'm going to have to check that one out.
Dude, Dub and I are watching this show right now, this drama. It's a British show called Foyle's War. Have you heard of this?
No.
Each app, there's like there's an ungodly
dude, you're like the
apps.
British guy. You're like
oh,
the
I've
British
seen,
dude
I've
now.
Seen a couple episodes of this.
Dude, it's good, but yeah. Each app is like 90 minutes long, and it's so subtle. Like action is like, you know, Foyle like raising an eyebrow, you know, and this guy's so understated.
Have you guys seen Broadchurch?
No, but I heard it was good, man. Yeah. Kind of in the same ways.
I think both of you guys would love it. It's another British mystery show. There isn't action, but there's, but there's tons of suspense and the character development, everything brilliantly written. David Tennant's the main actor in it and just crushes it. It's so good. So check out that one too. If you like Brits doing stuff on TV.
I do. Cause I like Downton Abbey. So
there you go. We're all basically British. And
I like Downton Abbey cause there is no action. It's only dialogue. And that's
we should do a whole Downton Abbey app, man. I mean, I know that thing is over forever, but I've never seen it. Just to help us through the grief. Pipe, here's what we need to do. You need to watch a few eps of that thing and report back.
You need to watch you need to take a couple of days, watch all, you know, six seasons.
That sounds like a serious relational commitment.
Dude, it is.
Yeah,
it
you
is.
Need to go steady with Downton Abbey for
yeah,
a while.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. You need to make out with Downton Abbey.
You need to make out in a parked car with Downton Abbey.
I don't think I'm ready to commit, guys.
You need to give Downton Abbey your Letterman's jacket and your class ring.
Yeah.
All right, I'll think about it.
Do it.
And on that note.
And on that note, Rachel the Held Evans. No, seriously. We've actually, seriously, I do need to go. So we've wandered to and fro. Join us next time, hopefully for the resurrection of Troves' radio career.
Hey there, it's Carly Mercouli, your host of Therapy and Theology, a weekly podcast that explores popular topics and questions related to faith, feelings, and spiritual formation. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.